part-time fanboy.
Part-time fanboy doing my thing.
More powerful than a locomotive.
I'm gonna do it part. I'm gonna do it part-time. I'm gonna do it part.
So why don't we get started?
Sure.
Yeah, let's get started. This is a part-time fanboy, and I am Christian Horn, and I am on the line with the Doctor Who expert, Barry Negrin.
That's me. Hello.
Yes. And so it sounds to me, I don't know, it sounds to me like you've got a lot to say as far as...
Oh, come on. I always have a lot to say about everything.
Yeah. Well, I mean, just in general, is it the finale in general? So before we start, let's just talk about what we're going to talk about. You're the Doctor Who expert.
Sure.
The Peter Capaldi season just finished last night. It's Sunday evening, November 9th, as we're recording this.
This is about as timely as you ever get.
Yeah. And so we are talking about the finale, and I think probably the Capaldi season as a whole, the first Capaldi season, because
right.
My assumption is that he's returning for a second.
And it is my hope that there will be many after that.
Yeah. Although a rumor that I did hear was that the shoot schedule was a little too much for Capaldi. And that he was only thinking of doing one season, so I don't know.
What?
Yeah, that's a rumor that I heard.
I had not heard that.
Yeah, so I don't know, but you're more plugged into the Who nerddom than I am, I think, so...
I'm going to have to look into that.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. The guy's older, right? So.
Come on, he's 55 or 56.
No, but he's... I understand that. I'm not saying he's like an old man, but I'm just saying, like, that was the rumor that I heard. It could be false. You know, or they could adjust the shooting schedule to his needs, I'm sure. But he seems like a very lively guy, so
he looks quite spry to me.
Yeah,
looks
he
like
does.
He could beat the crap out of both of us.
Yeah, exactly. So what are your thoughts? I mean, where do you want to start, with the whole season or just the finale, or you're in charge?
Wow, I'm drunk with power already.
You are. You are the master, or Missy, as I should say, or whatever you want to call him, her, it, whatever.
Well,
know.
We did a session. We did a podcast for
a session.
Deep
it is
breath.
Therapy. Yeah.
Didn't we do one for the season opener?
Yeah, we did do one for the season opener. Yeah.
So, you know, starting reaching back from there.
Yeah.
You know, Deep Breath, I thought, was a strong season opener. It was a classic regeneration episode. And I liked how Clara got spunky in there.
Yeah.
You know, and I thought a number of the stories. So overall, I was very happy with this season.
Yeah. Sounds like you were very happy.
There were some high points. I thought Into the Dalek. I know I might be in the minority, but I'm not sure. I really liked the second story a lot, when they did basically the ripoff of Fantastic Voyage and went inside a malfunctioning Dalek to fix it.
Yeah.
That I thought was really interesting. You know, it gave a lot more insight into some of the negative thoughts swirling around the Doctor's head when he plugged himself into the Dalek's consciousness. And that also gave us a great possible, you know, future character in this renegade Dalek, Rusty. You know, it was. I thought that was a fantastic episode, actually.
Yeah.
You know, and they were a little uneven after that. I thought overall there was too much, and I think a lot of people complained about this. There was too much emphasis on Clara and Danny Pink, you know, couple episodes in.
How is that different than Amy Pond and Rory, though? There was a lot of focus on those two. Like, how Really? People were complaining about that?
Yes, everyone kept saying they were sick of Danny Pink. And, you
know,
there were a number of people who commented in the finale last night that they're happy with what happened to him.
No way. Wait. First of all, I liked Danny Pink and I liked Clara. I think that Danny Pink was a really good addition to the mythology, at least as far as like the modern mythology is concerned. Again, for anybody who doesn't know, I started watching with the Christopher Eccleston, you know, run. I've watched, you know, many of the old ones, but I really liked what Danny Pink and I don't know the actor's name off the top of my head brought to the table this season. I think that there was a lot of, he really added sort of a dimension into how people see the Doctor, right? Like that's what I think. I mean, obviously they've sort of delved into like the Doctor is a dangerous man and stuff like this, but there was one episode where he started talking, and I can't remember which one it was, but where it's the one where he becomes aware that the Doctor is the Doctor, right? And that Clara is a bit more, like there's a bit more to her than meets the eye, yeah, shall we say? And, you know, where he starts referring to him as aristocracy. And and that's kind of what he is, right? I mean, he is part of, isn't his history that he's sort of royalty on Gallifrey, or am I wrong about that?
I don't recall that, but I do recall, I can tell you that he had been elected president of Lord President of Gallifrey. And it was a title that he, you know, ran from quite literally.
Gotcha.
I believe that was during the Tom Baker years.
Yeah.
I know that there was mention of it in the Tom Baker years, as well as the Peter Davison years.
Yeah.
But I don't know if that happened before that time or not. I think it was they had decided during one episode when the current president was assassinated that there was an overwhelming the agreement amongst the High Council that the Doctor become the next president. Yeah, thanks, but no thanks.
Very much like this finale, I would say.
Exactly.
No, but I mean, I think I could see like people having a problem with Danny Pink in that fandom being like, well, why does Clara have to give up being with the Doctor to hang out with Danny Pink? Like, why is he so, you know, why has he got to stick up his butt about, you know, her being with the Doctor? Like I get that. Like, I could see that. But as far as like what he kind of brought to the table and what that actor did, I thought he was pretty solid. You didn't like him?
You know, I totally got the, you know, soldier with regret and PTSD vibe. And it was well played, you know. But no, I thought they spent too much time on Earth with Clara and Danny just dating. You know, it took away from, you know, the attention of the show should be on the Doctor. You know, it was like a little too much.
Wow, that's really interesting because you and I have talked about Amy, you know, ad nauseum, and that was always my complaint with Amy and Rory was that,
but the two of them traveled with the Doctor. They were in the TARDIS.
Yeah.
They went with him. They were, you know, there was anywhere that he went, they went.
But don't
Not
you think
so
that...
with Clara and Danny. Danny barely went into the TARDIS.
Yeah. Which I liked. I liked a guy, you know, for one of the first times that I've kind of watched the show. I'm sure maybe there was another incident, but you met a character who was kind of a regular who was like, I don't want any part of this because I feel like regular people like you and me or like just about anyone you meet, this dude shows up with a box and he's like, I can go anywhere you want. I can go to any point in history. We could go to space. We would be like, F yeah, like let's do it. You know what I mean? And that is what I really like about Danny Pink, where he was very much like, look, like it's all fun and games, right? But, but you know, I've been to war and... You know, it's not like, you know, playing patty cake. This isn't just like a romp through the garden, which we've seen in a lot of episodes. And they tend to gloss over a lot, you know. And that's what I really thought Danny Pink's character brought to the table. The other thing is that Clara, other than the Doctor, has never really had an anchor to really any other character. So I felt that he kind of grounded her in a way. You know what I mean? He gave her something to be concerned about outside of literally. The Doctor. Yeah, literally. Yeah, that's true. I wasn't even trying to drop a pun in there. But but you know what I'm saying? Like, I really feel like that's, like, we've talked about Clara too before, where it feels like she is not, like, you know, they've never really fully developed her character. And how do you fully develop a character? You give them some sort of, right, like, backstory or other people to be, other things to be concerned about. And I felt that Danny Pink added that. I'm really surprised to hear that, you know, I've been busy with moving and stuff like that. So I haven't really been paying attention to, like, the gossip or whatever. I've been just trying to keep up with the shows.
Sure.
And I'm really surprised that a lot of people did not like Danny Pink, because when he got turned into a Cyberman at the end, I was like...
I felt badly about that.
Yes.
Yeah. No, I mean, he wasn't a bad guy.
Yeah.
He wasn't like a simpering dolt. I mean, it was clear that he was a tough guy, that he had enough already. He just wanted to teach math.
Yeah. Well, did you feel, if we're talking, I mean, it seems like we're delving a little bit into Danny Pink, but there was a little bit of a vibe of, like, and obviously this was not meant in any way in the show. I don't think it was definitely not meant this way. But anytime, like, the doctor very much, like, kept calling him, like, P.E., that he should be a physical education teacher, and he could never be a math teacher. Right. And I was like, this is kind of racist. And my wife kept, like, my wife and I would look at his, like, especially the first episode where he kept, like, denying, like, when he's in the school playing the, the janitor, he's pretending to be a janitor.
Right, the caretaker,
the caretaker. And he refuses to accept that the guy's a math teacher. And I'm like, why? Like, because he's a soldier? He used to be.
I think it was the soldier vibe.
Yeah, no, it definitely was. But, you know.
But it was very reminiscent, actually, of when the Ninth Doctor kept referring to Mickey as Ricky, as though he didn't give a shit what his real name was. He couldn't be bothered.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
Of course, it turns out that in a parallel universe, Mickey's name is Ricky.
Yeah. That's really funny. Yeah. So that's interesting. I didn't feel like, I really liked Danny Pink, and I was kind of sad to see him go at the end. I felt like he added something that I had never seen before, which was a character that was like, I'm not into this. You know what I mean?
Right.
So,
I guess from that perspective, it is interesting because, most of the time people have this sort of, love or respect or awe of the Doctor.
Yeah.
And now you've got this guy who's like, no.
Yeah, exactly.
I've seen it before.
Yeah. It just added a really interesting dimension to it, especially, I do feel a little bit of the Doctor, like, he's a dangerous man. He's a warrior. He's just as bad as the people he's fighting. I think that's been a little bit, like, overdone with this modern era. It's like, I get it. Like, I got it. Like, he's a hero. He has to do some bad things. You know, sometimes, it's like that when you stare into the abyss, it also stares into you sort of thing. Like,
sure.
I get that. Like, thank you, Captain Obvious. They keep doing it over and over again. But I really felt like with him, you got a unique perspective as to someone who's actually been in war. You know what
right.
I mean? And you've never, that's never really, even, which is interesting, like the Brigadier character who was, with UNIT, from the very little that I've seen of him in the old episodes, you never got that sense of, like, this is war and this is serious business. And so I felt that it added,
The Brigadier always had the very classic, stereotypical British stiff upper lip about
Sure.
And that's kind of what made him cool.
Yeah. So, like, getting off Danny Pink, let's talk a little bit about Clara, because you've never been a big Clara fan. I liked her.
I think that's a bit harsh.
No, it's not. Anytime I'm on Facebook talking about Clara, you're like, oh, Clara, she's horrible. I can't stand her. Like,
no.
Yeah.
I've never said I can't stand her.
No.
I said that I haven't. I've not been happy with what they've done with her character. Like, so, for example, what she did when she was playing Osmond Oswald in Asylum of the Daleks.
Yes.
Back in season 7, yes. I thought she was fantastic.
Yeah, yeah.
You know,
yeah.
She was spunky, she was smart, she could contribute to, you know, that she could help the Doctor.
Yeah.
And here, you know, she was reduced in a number of cases to basically whiny eye candy.
Uh-huh.
You know, and like some of the problems I had, like the biggest problem, like the worst scene I had from her was at the end of Kill the Moon, when she has, you know, when she, the Doctor basically says to her and her student and an astronaut, you know, you have to decide what happens to this entity. Do you kill it or do you let it live and possibly threaten the Earth in the process?
Yeah.
And, you know, they choose to let it live and it does fine and everything's fine. Everything's hunky-dory. There's a tremendous amount of, you know, fridge logic violation in that episode. But then at the end, she has this complete hissy fit about it. And she says, you know, I can't do it anymore. It's all too much. And she, and he says, I was totally on board with what he was telling her, that, look, you want to have, I was just taking your training wheels off. You got to basically grow some eggs and then, you know, woman up. And she's like, nope, sorry.
Okay. So this is where you and I think, because we definitely chatted a little bit of on Facebook and email about this. And it's funny because that was the episode Kill the Moon where I really feel like, well, maybe Time Heist too. I felt like, okay, this is starting to kick in. And that's episode 7. And then they did Mummy on the Orient Express, and I was like, okay, maybe that was a mistake. But Kill the Moon was an interesting episode because it's funny to me that you saw that as a hissy fit, and I've really seen Clara this season as somebody getting to know somebody who she doesn't know. You know what I'm saying? I really feel like this season has given us the most realistic reaction to a regeneration that I've ever seen on the show. Now, you've been watching the show, you know, much longer than I have. You've seen all, if not most, of like the old stuff. But for me, whenever he regenerates, and maybe it's because he's always been young and, you know, handsome or whatever, like good looking, but whenever he regenerates, it's always like, okay, and like an episode happens and the companion is like
back
cool with it. Yeah, right. Just totally like, and with this season, I really felt like this was like Clara, like, I don't know who this guy is. And even more so because she didn't know Tennant at all before. And the only one that she's known is Matt Smith, right? And so the change in personality from Matt Smith to Peter Capaldi was very drastic.
It's
so,
true. It's
like,
true.
In Kill the Moon, when she's used to a doctor who's always like pulling out the sonic screwdriver, here we go, blah, 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 blah.
Right.
And so
and
Kill
like,
the
nope,
Moon.
You
yeah.
do it.
Yeah.
Right.
And how many episodes have you and I seen of the modern Doctor Who? I don't know about the old Doctor Who, where the doctor's going on and on about humanity.
Ugh.
And like they will do their best, and you know, which I like. You don't, you're not crazy.
It's
about
just
that.
It's the speeches to me have to end.
No, but see, I that's an aspect that I like. I like the positivity of Doctor Who. Those are kind of the characters that I like in comic books, and the ones who are like, look, you know, because honestly, you and I know the world can be a shitty place, right?
Yeah.
But that's kind of why I sort of have always turned to that fiction. Why I like Superman more than Batman, like, for example. So when he, in that particular episode, Kill the Moon, is like, they have to, there's this big thing where it's like the Earth, and, you know, for years he's been like, you know, like the humans, and I am their caretaker, and I will take care of them. And then all of a sudden he's like,
nope, you do it.
Yeah, he's like, screw you, it's your decision. Of course she's going to be like, whoa, 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 wait a minute. Because there's also the fact that this guy's a Time Lord, right? He's
right.
been around forever, and he's seen so many things. And for even for somebody like you and me, we would be like, I don't know what to do here. Like, this, no, this isn't working for me. Yeah, like too much input. Like, who knows? We might even, to make a decision like that, you might even just pass out, right?
Maybe.
Like, that's a big decision. So when he just goes, when he's just basically like farting in the room, like, and it's all you. Like, for me, I was like, I was on her side. And then at the end, you know, it would have been different if he had said something like in a couple episodes leading up to it, like, or they had been building up to that moment where maybe he was acting differently and he was like, look, you got to stand on your own. Like, I'm not always going to be here to protect you, blah, blah, blah. And then all of a sudden in that episode, he's like, you know, all that stuff I've been talking about, this is it. Like, you know, but that didn't happen. So I know that, like, if, you know, maybe not you, but if it was me and somebody was like, guess what? You're on your own. I would have flipped out on him too. I would have lost my shit. I might have decked him, you know, at the end. I would have been like, this is unacceptable. Do you know where I'm coming from? Does that make sense?
Yeah, I hear what you're saying. I mean, because I wasn't really sure what her problem was at that point, especially since...
Because you were like, is she PMSing or what?
And you know, like, it's... What? Well, I had actually asked my eldest. I said, what do you think her problem was? And she said... Maybe she's got her period. I'm like,
no.
Okay, I'm glad you said it. No, I didn't. But okay, I think you might be right.
Yeah. No, go ahead with your thought, though, because you were just about to say something and I interrupted.
No, it's, I mean, I see what you're saying. But I mean, from my perspective, you know, it's not, nobody has a right to travel with a doctor. It's a privilege.
Sure.
And, you know, it's not afforded to many people.
Yeah.
And, you know, he needs people around him who will, you know, yes, to remind him of you know, what it means to be human, or, you know, to really stir the good in him. But he also needs people who aren't just going to be a blubbering mess.
Sure.
And, you know, I think it's almost as though, like, if I were a doctor myself, I would be much more of the Capaldi mode and the, say, the Sixth Doctor, the Colin Baker mode of kind of a little bit of a dick.
Because
here I am, I'm 2,000 years old, and yes, I've been taking care of these people for a long time. It's like, ah, oh, can you do something yourself already?
Well, but that's the thing, right? I mean, that's sort of the, like, dichotomy of the doctor, right? He's always, like, getting involved in our stuff. You know, and then what is he's going to turn around and be like, I'm not going to babysit you. It's like, well, what are you like? What are you doing here? Like, now it's your time to stand on your own. It's like, you don't just take your kids' training wheels off without like running behind them several times. Right. Like, you don't just like, wee, just pull them right off. So I could totally get that, like, with Clara. And that's the thing, like, with Clara, I thought that there was a step taken in the direction, which is why I like Danny Pink, in that they added a certain bit of gravity to the adventures this season, where it's like, oh, it's on. Like, this is not just playing around. Like people are dying. Like this is serious business. This is not like, you know, which, again, they've kind of done in past seasons. But I felt like that was sort of a theme running through this whole season, which is like, we're, you know, this new Doctor A, like you said, he's a bit of an asshole. I think, but not only that,
no complaints here.
Yeah. No, I get you. No, I love Capaldi. Like, I love the guy. I think that this has been a really good doctor. Like, I'm not complaining about it, like, at all. Like, I love this, but I think, like you said earlier, I think that the writing was really spotty this season.
Yes. I think we agree on that.
Yeah.
I mean, because there have been some leaps in the storytelling that have basically been more like gaps.
Yeah. And I also feel like you said, like there have been some big leaps, and then it's like two steps forward, you know, three steps back, like in the same episode, where you're like watching an episode and you're like, I'm totally with this. Like, this is like a really good episode. And then something happens and I'm like, oh man, like they were like a Time Heist, I think, the one where they're in the bank.
Right.
You know, like I felt like so much of it was like a little bit clunky and a little all over the place. And I'm like, what are they doing here? This kind of isn't making sense to me. And then the ending was so good, like wrapped it up in such a big bow that I was just like, oh, that was well done. You know, I kind of called the reveal at the end before it happened.
Right.
But at the same time, I was just like, oh, they wrapped it up, you know?
I thought Time Vice was one of my favorite episodes of the season, actually.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, because it was clever. You know, there was a sense of mystery throughout, where you're like, what the hell is going on?
Yeah.
I didn't think that there were any gaps in the story. I didn't think that there were any, you know, leaps in logic we had to take.
Yeah,
that,
no.
You know, that were just wibbly wobbly away. Sure. I thought that it made it that it was, you know, a concise. And it was the type of story that I like, where he's not saving the whole universe or the whole planet. He's actually only saving this one alien, basically, mm-hmm. at the end. And I thought that was, and it was clever the way that they played with the fact that, you know, he is a time traveler, and that he was able to, you know, fold back on his own timeline and you know, make this story happen.
Yeah.
So I didn't find any, like, that to me was like, it was a tight episode. You know, there was a sense of like the momentum was there. It didn't stall. There weren't any scenes that I thought you should cut out. It didn't strike me that there was a lot of filler in that. I just thought it was a good episode. It was well crafted.
Yeah. Did you think that they were setting up there was the one young guy who had like cybernetics in his like head? I can't remember the character's name, but
Sai.
Oh, Sai. There you go. Do you think that they were kind of setting him up almost to be like a Captain Jack character, like to come back later on?
You know, look, I mean, maybe, what about Cybra, though, the shapeshifter?
Yeah, that's true.
She was pretty cool.
Yeah, yeah. But I felt like Sai, if that's the character's name, actually said at one point, like, we'll see each other again or something like
that.
Yeah,
well, you never know.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I miss the Captain Jack character. Like, I always loved Captain Jack.
Yeah, yeah. I would love to see him again.
Oh, me too. He's too busy on Arrow, I guess.
Did you ever watch Torchwood?
Oh, hell yeah, I did. I love Torchwood.
That was a great show.
I love the first, I love every season that wasn't in the United States. Let's just put it that way. The Showtime one is an abomination and should be erased from time.
You're talking about the Miracle Day?
Yes, that's the one that the United States produced, right?
Did we? Is that why it was so bad?
Well, I think it was a co-production, and I think it was on Showtime, right? And
it was on Stars.
Stars, okay. That's right. I thought it was on Stars. Yes, it was an abomination. It was terrible. Like, I couldn't. No, I was stunned like by how bad it was. I was just like, they moved Captain Jack and what's her face?
Eve.
Yeah, they moved.
Gwen Cooper.
Gwen, yeah. Eve is the actress, I think, right?
Yeah,
anyway,
Eve Miles.
Whatever. They kicked them to the back and put the Americans in the front. And I was like, why would you do that when you've got this fantastic actor, you know, John Barrowman?
Both of them.
And they both have had such great chemistry. And then you bring in these new American actors who are just chewing scenery. It was just horrible. It was horrible.
You know, Eve Miles, great side note. Eve Miles at one point was voted sexiest woman in Wales.
Oh,
it was
really?
Like, I could totally see it because she's she's so foxy.
Definitely, definitely. So what about the rest of this season? I mean, as a whole, you seem to have liked it, but any other particular standouts or disappointments?
Let's see. I thought In the Forest of the Night was weak. The one with the trees.
Okay.
Because to me, that was sort of like the Clara's Leaf all over again. You know, you had this ridiculous Deus Ex Machina.
Where
the trees just grow up overnight. And they just disappear.
I liked that episode. You know what? And let me tell you something. That's the first modern day Doctor Who that I've sat down and watched with my daughter. And she didn't know. She was like asking questions through in the whole thing. This is the one where the trees grow all over the earth. Yeah, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. You didn't like that one?
It was okay. I mean, I wasn't crazy about it.
You and I are like the odd couple of Doctor Who. Yeah, no. Okay, wait. Go on. What is it that you didn't like?
But I thought that the, you know, the fact that they just disappeared at the end was insanely ridiculous, and even more so was that Maeve's sister just appeared.
Yeah.
How the fuck did that happen?
Yeah, I will totally, I'm totally with you on that, that they totally didn't. You knew it was coming, though. You knew,
I mean, did the trees
happen.
Bring her back? I mean, what, yeah, what kind of nonsense was that?
They didn't explain that at all, and I'm totally with you on that. But what I did like about that episode was very much like, you know, that you, that, that there was a menace that started off as creepy, and then by the end of the episode, it's like, oh, they're here to help, you know.
That, that was that cool. I liked that, about that it. I was happy with.
And I really did sort of like, you know, I'm a California liberal. I really liked the whole, like, the trees are trying to save the earth. They're not here to destroy the earth. You know what I mean? It's like, yeah, we keep wrecking the, like, I think at one point, didn't Clara or somebody say, like, why would the trees be mad at us or something? And Doctor Who's like, what are you talking about? Yeah, like, what are you, nuts? That's really funny. The one that really bugged me was Robot of Sherwood.
Really?
I was just like, oh, especially at the end, that bit with the arrow where
that almost ruined the episode for me.
Oh, it totally ruined the episode because I was just like, I mean, I was kind of like okay with it. Like, I'm like, okay, this is kind of weak, blah, blah, blah. But then when they shoot the arrow and it stops the rocket, and I was like, oh, you got to be kidding me. Like, I was like, this is painful to me.
That was,
like, that's how bad watching that was.
That was not great, but,
no.
I will, yeah, and I can understand why people would have a problem with the whole episode. But to me, the fact that like the banter between Robin Hood
and
the Doctor was just so priceless.
Yes.
You know, he was, you know, like, especially when he laughs in the face of danger, and the Doctor said, I don't remember what Robin Hood said, but basically the Doctor said, has anyone ever punched you in the face because of it? I was like, I love this guy.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, yeah. Well, that's the thing is, it's one of those episodes where it starts off, has like really interesting things going on, and then just by the end just degraded for me, where I was just like, oh, this is painful. Like it was just like, and I think for me, that was the worst moment of the season. That bit with the arrow at the end.
The arrow was the worst.
I was like, you gotta be kidding me. But you know what's interesting is we haven't even, I mean, we kind of talked about how we felt about Capaldi when we talked about the premiere, but why don't we talk a little bit about just like how we feel about him the whole season? I mean, you've already said that you really love him. What is it about him that you really dig? Like, why do you really dig him?
I like the fact that he's not trying to be his companion's boyfriend. I like that there's not really any flirting going on. I like that he's much more old school about it. That he's, you know, you really get the sense that he's 2,000 years old. And that he's like, you know, he's got this, you know, gravity about him. That he's got this... not so much seriousness because he can, but this sarcasm that he's a little nasty.
Yeah.
And I like that. I like the fact that he's not just all smiles and sunshine and that, like, you know, he's always like, oh, I'll save the day. It's like, you know what? I'm out of options here.
Yeah. No, that's the thing that I really like about him too. But there's a little bit of a, cause I think even when we were talking in our recording about the first episode of the season, Deep Breath, where it seemed like after a while, it was like, I get it. I see why they hired Capaldi, because the work that I've seen him do, he's either been like the intense kind of villain or creepy guy, or he's been like just a complete like raving asshole. Like, you know what I mean? And he's very good at that.
Malcolm Tucker.
Yeah. And in Deep Breath, it seemed like they were doing a little bit of like softening him up a little bit. So I was like very interested to see Capaldi play like both sides of that. But it seems like as the season went on, it was like, no, we're just going to get like the really abrasive sort of guy that Capaldi's like really known for playing, which was fine. And I really like that. I mean, I'm sarcastic myself in real life. Like, I love that. That sort of thing, like that in your face, like thing that this new guy's got, you know, so I love this take on it. Like, you know, and it's funny because the Matt Smith episodes, you know, that for me, you know, the Matt Smith era wasn't necessarily the greatest, but I liked Matt Smith. And it's really funny because I'm finding that I liked Matt Smith and I really like Capaldi, but I think what I'm having a problem with, which is bizarre to me because he's an amazing writer, especially if you watch Sherlock, is Stephen Moffat at being the showrunner, maybe.
Interesting.
You know, because I feel like that the writing is so, can be so spotty.
It can,
you know,
be a little thin, yeah. And, no, it's true. And then, like, they don't tie up the stories properly.
Yeah.
So that actually leads nicely into my next shift, my next sort of line of inquiry for you,
yeah,
is what did you think of this story arc with Missy?
So, well, I loved it. I mean, I was like really, I liked the finale. I'll put it that way. Like, I feel that they really kind of did like an interesting bait and switch. I mean, I know that from the beginning, there were a lot of people that were saying like, oh, it's the master, you know, Missy is short for mistress and blah, blah, blah. And I was like, so, you know, I don't think that Moffat got away with the sort of like, it's the master, like the big reveal as much as he would have wanted to.
Right, because his fan base is too smart.
Yeah, yeah. And I feel that, you know, as a whole, like the whole Cybermen thing, like even though I saw the trailer for like, you know, he coming in the weeks ahead, like I didn't make the death like heaven connection thing, you know, being tied in with the Cybermen. And I was like, oh, you know what I mean? Like that part of it really got me. And I sort of, it's one of those things where you sort of psych yourself out in a way, because as far as Missy was concerned, being the master, like I was like, no, there's no way it's going to be the master. There's no way people figured it out. You know, Stephen Moffat's too smart for that. There's no way. And then, so I had convinced myself that it wasn't going to be the master. So when it was the master, I was surprised. Like, I was like, oh, it is the master, you know.
Oh, well,
but
how,
I thought
how
that
nice
she,
for you.
But I really liked her a lot. What about you?
I like the character. I've been a big master fan, you know, since the beginning. Roger Delgado was before my time, but... you know, in the Tom Baker years, he was really sinister.
Roger Delgado the first actor to play him?
He was. He was the one during the John Pertwee years.
Oh, okay.
And by the time I was, you know, conscious and watching, he'd already passed away.
Gotcha.
So the first master story I saw was The Deadly Assassin, where the Doctor returns to Gallifrey, and he's fighting the master inside this computer simulation called the Matrix, well before the movie.
Interesting.
Yeah. And you know, the problem with the master is he'd already used up his last regeneration, so he was this like sort of skeletal crypt keeper looking guy, and you know, he was trying to figure out a way to cheat death, and you know, there were some issues, and he's the one who assassinated the president, blah blah blah. And then later on, you know, in a later episode, he's still kind of falling apart physically, but he ends up sort of possessing the body of the father of one of the Doctor's companions, Nyssa, and her father was the sort of the president of Tremas. He was the keeper of Trakan. His name was Tremas, and he possessed Tremas's body, which was convenient because he had a really nice beard. So the master is usually all about the beard.
Okay.
So it was perfect that he became the master. So anyway, I've been a big fan. So anyway, they could bring him back. I thought the John Sim master was great.
Yeah.
He was a little bit of a lunatic, but that's okay. And
yeah.
I really thought Missy, you know, this Michelle Gomez, did a great twist on that. I'm getting my head around and getting past my initial negative reaction to the gender switching regeneration.
Oh, really? So you had like a big thing about that? Like
medium thing about it.
What was it? What is it that bothered you? Because, I mean, now that's canon, right?
Now it's canon. Yes, you can.
Yeah.
They never said that in the earlier stories. The first time that was ever mentioned, I mean, unless it was in one of the books, which I never really read a lot of the non-televised books, but you know, the first time they'd even intimated that was in that, you know, that little webisode, that like 10-minute webisode with the Eighth Doctor, The Night of the Doctor. That was the prequel to the 50th anniversary special, when he crash lands on Karn, and the Sisterhood of Karn gives him the elixir that will regenerate him. And she says, you know, you can choose, you know, thin or fat, tall or short, man or woman. And like, I heard that, I was like, wait, what? Could you say that again?
So you didn't hear like all the rumors like before Matt Smith became the Doctor, that they were looking at, and I can't remember the actor's name. He's a really good actor. I don't know if he's been on Doctor Who before, but he was in this remake of a show, a BBC 70s show called Survivors, which I don't know if you've ever seen that, but and he was in, I think he was in another show called that Stephen Moffat worked on, Jekyll. Or a Jekyll, a modern day Jekyll and Hyde sort of thing. Okay. I think it was called Jekyll, which was amazing. If you can track that down, you should. It's fantastic. It's the first time I ever heard of Stephen Moffat beyond Doctor Who. And it was just, it's a 3 episodes and it's fantastic. But anyway, they were thinking about hiring an African American a black actor, not African American. Yeah, so, but that would have been okay, but not a woman?
It seemed to me to be too much of a switch, because I mean, I was really thinking of it just from a pure biological perspective, that, you know, men and women have different DNA, you know, like there's an X chromosome and a Y chromosome in this one spot. Now, he admittedly, he's a Time Lord, obviously.
Maybe well, he's got 2 hearts. I mean,
yeah, so there's already a lot going on that's different, but
yeah,
you know, you noticed, well, you haven't seen the Romana, the big Romana regeneration scene.
No, not yet. We're getting,
you know,
there.
She cycled through a bunch of different forms willingly. They were all female. I mean, maybe she just didn't feel like going male, but I don't know. It just didn't, it seemed to me to be like not right for some reason. But if that's, apparently you can do it, okay. You know what, Moffat, you're in charge.
Yeah.
I'm just along for the ride.
Yeah, well, no, I mean, it's interesting because, I mean, that raises a whole bunch of questions about the Time Lords in general, right? Like,
right.
What does gender mean?
Right.
Well, how do they, like, reproduce? Yeah, like basically, like, all kinds of, like, what are gender roles on Gallifrey? Like, you know.
Like, I think it opens up such a can of worms. Like,
yeah,
now
yeah.
You've got a lot to think about there, buddy.
Yeah, yeah. But that's what Moffat can be really good at, which is, like, pulling out, like, the stuff that you never thought about, right? Like that's one of the things, especially if you're watching something like Sherlock, right? He's a genius at like just kind of zigging when you think he's going to zag, right?
True.
So,
true.
I mean, did you suspect like it was coming, or like
that she was the master?
Yeah.
I'll tell you when I first suspected it. Not because of all the internet chatter, but when in one of the first episodes that she showed up, I think it was actually it was in the first episode, right? Wasn't it in Deep Breath after the half man, the half faced man wakes up in this garden, and he's greeted by Missy. And if you looked in the way the garden was shaped, it looked like there was this, you know, it was a relatively round area with this central fountain. And to me, I'm looking at that, I'm like, man, that looks like a TARDIS control room. So I was like, Missy, and she's a little nutty. I'm like, I wonder if that's the master. So,
interesting.
You know, like, so that, I was thinking about that early on.
Yeah, yeah.
And actually, though, so I liked Missy. I liked her as the master. I thought she got it. I love the fact that she's Scottish also. I thought that was cute. I mean, like, really Scottish. Like, she's got a thicker Scottish accent than Capaldi does.
Yeah, yeah.
One of the things I did not like about the whole reveal was that they dribbled and drabbled it out the same exact way they did with Madame Kavarian and, you know, the silence. You know, like, that whole storyline where they had her popping in for, like, 10 seconds or 15 seconds every episode. It was like, dude, you're sort of copying yourself, and not from that long ago, you know.
I
think that way, you know, the way that it was told was very derivative of the Madame Kavarian, and she looked like Madame Kavarian. I'm like, shit, is she back? Like, did she get her eye back? I mean, what's going on there?
Well, and that's this thing that I said before that bothers me a little bit about Moffat's writing, is that he really borrows seems to borrow tiny threads of stuff that he himself has done before. It's not, it's not even that he's like ripping off other people. He's ripping himself off. So, which to me is kind of like, it's time to move on,
it's
buddy.
It's like being lazy. Yeah.
You know, and
it's
and,
like if you're a jazz musician and you've got this really great riff that you keep using over and over again.
Yeah. And the thing is like when you watch something like Sherlock, you know, you're like, that is so, I mean, there are a couple episodes like finale, end of episodes of Sherlock where I've been like, okay, like, whatever. But it's so tightly made and it's so well put together.
Yeah, and Benedict Cumberbatch is so amazing.
Yeah, yeah. And I feel like that Sherlock, and I've said this before, is pulling focus from Doctor Who. And, you know, and I feel that Doctor Who suffers because of Sherlock. Not that I want Sherlock to go away, but I just feel like, how can you keep that going where you've got two series that you're sort of focusing on? And then God knows, you know, he's writing other things, you know, like other projects he's working on. So, I mean, I just think that there's definitely a thing where it seems like he just keeps cribbing from himself a little bit.
Yeah.
And the guy's a better writer than I'll ever be, you know, I mean, but at the same time, it's just like, I mean, even in that, even in Deep Breath, there were a lot of times where I was like, dude, I've seen this before, like, you know, with Blink and stuff like that, where it was just a little too similar, you know, to what has come before. But yeah, it's interesting. So, but what did you think about the hardcore Mary Poppins Missy vibe? Because that was great.
She was great. She was good. She really went to town.
The way they dressed her and the way she looked and the way she, at the very end, she kind of floated into the with the umbrella.
Right. I mean, not to make it too obvious.
Yeah, yeah.
But, you know, there's always been some speculation in the modern day that Mary Poppins was a Time Lord.
Yeah.
Because, you know, her bag was bigger on the inside and she could do all this wacky shit.
Yeah. No, I mean, I've heard that joke, but for Moffat to sort of like kind of
buy into
that.
Yeah.
Because at the same time, you know, who knows how long Missy's been around.
Sure.
Right? I mean, they do say like at one point, like in Death in Heaven, right? They say like, how long have we had a concept of the afterlife? So like, has this Missy been traveling through time? Like, who knows? Maybe she was Mary Poppins at one point.
Maybe.
And just called herself Mary Poppins and, you know, visited with the kids and danced on the chimneys with Dick Van Dyke, you know, I don't know. You know, it's like, it just, it's such a great like little sort of like inside joke. You know, so what was it, because when I texted you earlier, I sent you a message earlier today, I was like, you know, I was like, oh, are we podcasting tonight? You were like, hell yeah, I've got a lot to say. So it sounds like, do you have a lot to say about the finale or do you have a lot to say about the whole thing in general? Like what, it sounds like you have some strong feelings about something. What are they?
You haven't been listening for the last 45
No,
minutes.
I've been listening, but it sounded like that there was something in particular that you were like, what?
Well,
you
no, know? I mean, I felt like we have to recap the season and, you know, I really wanted to delve into the finale, that's two-parter.
Let's get into that.
So, okay, so digging into this two-parter with Dark Water and Death in Heaven.
Yeah.
You know, I think there was evidence of a good chunk of sloppy writing in these two episodes.
Because, I can see that.
You know, like, I mean, I love the concept that she's uploading the consciousnesses of dead people. But where is this nether sphere? I mean, is it in her TARDIS? I mean, where was it?
No, didn't you see it? It was that round hard drive. That's what it was.
They were in that hard drive.
Yeah, they were just in that hard drive. I mean, it was like this big floating globe with like lights all over it, right? Like that was the nether sphere and they were all in there.
Yeah, but then how could Danny and the doctor and Clara see it? I mean,
Danny was in it.
You're right. We never actually saw, you're right. We never saw the doctor and Clara with Danny. They were calling in.
Were calling. So it was basically like his or all those.
So it was a virtual reality space.
Yeah. Okay. It was basically a hard drive. And, you know, it was a space that they even said it was like made up for them so that they could like exist in it and, you know, you know, do all that. So that is something that they pointed out. Like, they were like, that's the nether sphere. And she even said, and he says, like, oh, it's a Gallifreyan hard drive or something. Okay. Yeah, yeah. So that was the nether sphere. Yeah.
Got it. Okay.
No, that's all right.
I'm gonna have to go back and watch it again. yeah, I mean, I had some, okay, then, you know, there was one of the things I was not crazy about was that they reanimated the Brigadier as a Cyberman.
I've heard that a lot of people have been flipping their shit over that.
Yeah.
What is the problem with that?
I mean,
because
look,
he does something good.
No, he does, of course, but it's like, don't mess with the Brigadier.
Oh, like what?
It was
that
a little
he got
too
turned
sacred.
Into a Cyberman?
Yeah.
Or just don't bring him into the modern era at all. Like, don't talk about him or
don't turn him into a Cyberman, because that's sort of disrespectful to his memory. And then, of course, you know, he flew up into the air after he was done, but the clouds were all gone, right? So what's he going to go do now?
Oh, so are you basically, I guess my...
So you've got the Cyber Brigadier floating around now?
Well, I thought that he just like kind of blew himself up or something, like when he took off. I didn't even really think about that. That's interesting. I thought it was, okay, sort of like the only time I've seen the Brigadier was in blanking out the karate guy, Doctor Who, you know. John Pertwee's regeneration. He's in that episode, right?
Oh, yes.
Yeah, he's in that. That's the only time I've seen him. So that's my only exposure to him. And you know, not knowing like the ins and outs of every appearance, you know, I thought it was a really nice send-off, you know, because obviously the guy died, right? Like
in real life.
In real life, while probably they were in production or writing these episodes, and they probably felt like they needed to do something sweet in the episode. And he saved his daughter, right?
Yes.
Did kind of what Danny Pink did, which was overcome his programming and, you know, save his... Obviously, they can't have the guy there, right? Or somebody playing that character. So why not, you know, make him a Cyberman who does the right thing in his final act to save his daughter, right?
Yeah.
Because that was sort of the thing, right? It's like everyone in the history of the world who has died is coming back, right?
Well,
so why not?
But I mean, that was another issue. I mean, they needed, for some reason, the Master needed everybody's skeletons, but skeletons decompose.
Yes.
Why do they need that? It's not really clear.
No, I thought,
the cyber pollen was bullshit.
well, what about it was bullshit? Dude, okay, we are talking about Doctor Who.
No,
we've
I know.
We've seen a lot more bullshittier things
no,
than
it's
the
true.
Cyber pollen. But wait, so what was it about the cyber pollen?
You know, but why? How come then, you know, look, it rained on people, too. How come the living weren't transformed?
Yeah, well, that's true. I mean, they did not explain it. They did not explain about that. I mean, the thing that sort of bugged me was that, you know, and maybe this is the zombie fanatic part of me, the horror movie fan, is that they're coming out of the graves, you know, fully completed Cybermen. Like that was the thing that I didn't get, like the rain with the cyber pollen and what, like it constructed the skeletons from them, or had she been doing that all along? Like that's the sort of thing where I was like, when they were coming out of the graves as fully constructed Cybermen,
right.
I was like, really buy that, because from what I've seen of Cybermen, it's like they have to be built, right? They're like put together,
right?
And, you know what I mean? And it's just like, so for them to
sort
all
of, like,
of a sudden,
like the Borg,
yeah. And so for them all of a sudden to have like this ability to like just make their skeleton
instant Cyberman, know? Just add water,
yeah. That kind of bugged me. I was a little bit like, yeah, this is a little too convenient. This is a little too, you know, sloppy. The other thing that I like, that I really disliked, is the Doctor Who nerd, you know, with the bow tie,
they
girl.
Killed her.
Yeah, but not only did they kill her, but okay, so she's like, come, whisper. She's like, I have something to tell you. And she's scared of her and she gets closer. Come. And then she literally whispers to her, I'm going to kill you in a minute. And there's two guards standing on the side, and she doesn't say anything about it. She doesn't say, like, the guards don't say anything. Like, you know, she basically says, I'm going to kill you. And you know, she doesn't say to the guards, hey, why don't we
get out of here.
Get out of here, drug this woman.
Check the handcuffs.
Knock her out. Check the handcuffs. And then she pulls herself out of the handcuffs, right? Or the Doctor Who nerd woman pulls the handcuffs out, and the guards don't do anything. They just stand there. They just wait for her to escape. And I was just like, that bugged the hell out of me. I was like, this is a little too much like old TV show standing around syndrome, where it's like they don't know what to do with a couple of characters. So just, you know, just don't do anything. Just stay right there. You know, that bugged me.
It really, that was problematic. What bothered me though was the death of Osgood, you know, the nerd from UNIT, because she was such an awesome character.
There was potential there.
You know, and in fact, actually, even the Doctor recognized it and said, you know, all of space and time, just put on your bucket list.
Yeah,
you know,
like,
you're coming with me, lady.
Yeah, exactly. Like I felt like that was really interesting.
You're up next.
Yeah, you're up next. I thought that they were setting her up to be the next companion.
But you know, once something I saw in the Thanosphere, which gave me a little bit of hope, was maybe that the one that died was the Zygon impersonating her. Because remember, from the 50th anniversary episode, Zygons are living among us. They're like millions of them, and we just don't know. So maybe that was the one who decided to, you know, keep the Osgood persona going. Who knows?
No, I think it was really interesting. There was a lot of stuff that I really liked about this finale. I really dug the... I like when... Oh, wait. Clara, here's the other thing that I really liked about this season, and you know, just talking about...
By the way, just to cut in for a second, I don't dislike Clara. I
think it's really bugging you.
The actress is fantastic. I think she's doing a great job
with
the material she's given.
Absolutely.
And I think she's really cute. I mean, she's
very
cute. Of the modern companions, she might be the prettiest one.
I think you may be right. It's
not to like reduce it to something so...
I know. So, we're men. It's okay.
We are.
And no, I mean, it's a toss-up between her and Amy Pond, as far as like best looking for me. But she's a brunette, so she wins out.
Yeah.
No, but with Clara, the thing that I really dug about this season and the reason, you know, talking about this finale... is, you know, she pretends to be the doctor to like kind
oh my
of,
god
like,
that was the best
her.
Scene
yeah it's great but wasn't it interesting like in Dark Water and in the she knows where all the keys are, she's actually piloted the TARDIS. This seems like the companion, or at least in my mind, or in the modern era, that has had the most sort of free reign of the TARDIS, of all of them. Like, she knows how to pilot it.
She had her shit together the most.
Yeah, and she knew where everything was. She knew how to control it. She knew how to try and psych, you know, how she would get the doctor to sort of, you know, how to sort of defeat the doctor if she ever wanted to.
Right.
So, like, for me, like, Clara in this season really jumped ahead of the pack, because I've never really seen... another companion,
except for River Song.
River's not technically a companion to me. She's not. She's a Time Lord. She's like one of them, right?
So, but
to me, I've never really seen a companion, you know, quote unquote companion,
step up like that much.
Know where all the keys are. Know how to drive the TARDIS. Know the ins and outs of everything. Like, I really felt like with her, they finally sort of got a companion that was like, dude, like, I could handle this, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
If anything happens to you, you know what I mean?
Well, like, especially, I mean, she really did a good job in Flatline.
Yeah, Flatline. Yeah, I was going
to
say.
That was like, the premise of the episode was a little bit dopey, but...
No, it was a dopey episode.
But I got past it because she did such a fantastic job.
Yeah. And that's the thing, is I feel that there were a lot of points in this season, and the finale in particular, where... you know, she really stepped up, and she was like...
Did you notice, like, by the way, when right after she said, you know, she gave her little speech in the beginning and she said, I'm the doctor. Did you notice in the opening credits that the eyes They were not Capaldi's eyes. They were Jenna Coleman's eyes.
Really?
Go look at the opening credits again.
Oh, that's really interesting. Oh, wow. Yeah, no, I mean, I do have to say, I think that there were several episodes. I think this finale was really solid for me. I mean, it played to everything that I particularly like.
One more little pet peeve.
Go for it.
How could the kid come back to life?
Oh, well, I don't know. And
oh, but
I mean,
you know what, though? That's explainable by that old Nethersphere thing, that it's a Gallifreyan hard drive. That, you know, it can do wacky shit that a regular hard drive can't do. You know? I mean, the fact that that Missy could travel there, you know, she's a corporeal being, and she could enter this place.
At the end, I mean, they weren't coming out of the hard drive. I mean, they were coming out of, like, whatever the Great Beyond was, like, when Danny came back.
No, but Danny and that kid that he accidentally killed.
Yeah, no.
They were in the Nethersphere.
Yeah, they were, but then the Nethersphere started falling apart and became all the Cybermen.
Right.
And then the Cybermen got blown up. So Danny had a device that helped him make one last trip back. And he used it, which is another thing that I really liked, because I was like, oh, they're just going to bring him back. You know what I mean? But they didn't.
No.
He did like a really beautiful thing, which was bringing back the kid that he accidentally killed,
right,
you know, in the Middle East, which I was like at the end of the episode, I was like, wow. Now, as to how did they regenerate his whole body and all that stuff? Whatever, man. It's Doctor Who, you know?
They shot an arrow of gold at him.
Yeah, I mean, exactly. Like, there's wackier stuff. Like, that's the thing that, like, the thing that bothers me is when you mess up on characterization and you completely just, like, mess up on like, plot and story. Like, when you just completely are just, like, whatever. But when you're talking about, like, with superhero stuff, like, the things that used to bug me when they made, like that first Hulk movie, you know, with Eric Bana.
Yeah.
You know, there was so much stuff in there about, like, explaining how he became the Hulk. How did he become the Hulk? What about the Hulk? And it's like, who gives a shit, dude? It's about a guy who turns green when he gets angry.
And he's like, and he has an anger problem.
Yeah, exactly. And that's it. That's all I need to know.
Right.
So, like, for a show like this, like, the reason that I've always, and I've said this before, I've said this to you, I say this to anybody who, like, asks me why I like Doctor Who. The reason I like Doctor Who is because it reminds me of the original Star Trek, where it was like, yeah, there was stuff that didn't make sense, but who gives a shit? It was just science fiction. You're along for the ride, and right, you're having fun. And they can do wacky stuff because it's the future or it's alien technology, and we don't need to know that it's nanobots or, you know, it doesn't need to be explained to me because, you know, I couldn't explain an iPod to Christopher Columbus. You know what I mean? Like, it just wouldn't make sense, you know? So that to me is why I'm like, whatever. Like, that's something I can sort of let go. You know what I mean?
But yeah.
When I start to get irritated is when they do explain something and they say, this is the way it works. And then they just go back on that. And I'm like, that bugs
me. Oh,
yeah.
No, lack of continuity is terrible.
Yeah, that drives me crazy. Like, that sort of thing. But I don't know. Like, there were a lot of, like, interesting things. Like, I really love how, like, at the very end, you know, like, I love the bit about, like, Missy being like, we were friends. We can go back there. You know, we
right,
can, you know, be friends. Like, sort of, like, playing on his, you know, nostalgia or his sympathy of, like, we could go back to Gallifrey together.
Well, like, this was basically that was like the tail end of that episode with David Tennant and John Sim.
Yeah.
Where, you know, that was right after he had finished being the Prime Minister of Britain, and you know, what's his name? David Tennant as the Doctor, you know, regenerated thanks to the prayers and thoughts of everybody around the world through the satellite system. Talk about your weak explanation, but But you know,
it fits with the show.
I know, but you know, but I passed that because at the end of that is when, you know, the doctor is telling the master, you don't have to kill yourself. We can just, the two of us can travel together. How awesome would that be? And basically the master says, screw you, I'd rather be dead.
Yeah. So, I mean, the biggest
this was the reverse of that.
Yeah. It was totally the reverse of that. And this time the doctor was like, F that, I'm not going to do it.
Right.
You know.
But he wasn't going to kill her, though.
Yeah, no, he wasn't. You don't think he was going to kill her?
No, I don't think so. I think he was going to take her away somewhere.
Really? Like, because I thought he was going to kill her because she was like, you promised me, right? Like, she needs to die. And he was like, I'm going to do this so that you don't have to.
He lies all the time.
Yeah, that's true. But I don't know.
The last thing he said to her was a lie.
What did he say? What was the last thing he said to her?
He said, I found Gallifrey, so I'm going to go leave and be there now.
Oh, that's true.
He didn't find it.
That's true. But he did that because he thought that... Do you think that he thinks that Danny Pink is still alive? Or do you think he was just kind of going along with her?
I'm not sure. I don't know if he was listening. You know, like, I think they were both wrapped up in their own goodbyes. That they weren't... Like, do you think that she thinks that he found Gallifrey? It was that easy?
I think that she does. I think that she does.
Maybe.
Yeah. So, but here's the thing, because this was my pet peeve, the president of the Earth thing. That's where I was like, oh, come on, really? Like I was just like, really? That's just stupid.
That was stupid.
Like, you didn't need that. You know what I mean? Like, I was like, this is a little bit. This is dumb. I can
understand that, you know, the armies of the Earth will defer to UNIT in a case like this. And now they're making him in charge of UNIT, at least.
Yeah.
To make him president of the Earth was dumb.
Yeah, the whole president of the Earth, it's not necessary.
No.
It doesn't need to be in there. She could easily just say, like, look.
UNIT's in charge.
UNIT's in charge. We're deferring to you. All the leaders of the world have deferred to you. And the thing that bugged me about that, too, is, again, going back in the history of the show, there have been so many times, and not just this show, but Torchwood, which, you know, the continuities are intertwined.
Yes.
Where it's like, I'm here to save the world, and you've got some jackass bureaucrat or, like, world leader who's like, and especially the final season of Torchwood, where they're like, we're going to go to the United States, and they're like hunting Torchwood. And I'm like, wait a minute, how many times has this organization saved the world, and now you're going to hunt them down? This is just the dopiest thing. Like, you know, so like, there have been so many times in Doctor Who history where the Earth people are afraid of him, or they're kind of like, they don't understand him, or there's some like prime minister who's like, yeah, I don't trust you. And you know, for them to just be like, okay, you're president of the Earth, whatever, that was just like, that was like sort of like an 8-year-old wrote that part.
Exactly.
And
he's
like, I'm gonna make him president of the Earth. Like, it's not necessary. No, I mean, it's not necessary. It's basically, you know, that to me is what you would write if you were writing a little kiddie show. You know, which, right. I understand that they still are kind of like, this is for kids, and it may very well be kids.
Don't insult kids' intelligence.
Yeah, where it's like, this is the president of the Earth. Like, a 5-year-old would be like, he's the president of the Earth.
Yeah,
like, yeah,
but her 7-year-old sister would be like, that's bullshit.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, you know, that was the biggest thing that bugged me. Other than that, I mean, that scene at the end with Danny where he takes off the face plate and he's like, he's half Cyberman. My wife even was like, whoa, that's rough. Like, that's hardcore, you know? So, I mean, as a whole, I really think they ended up with the strong finale.
I have to tell you, I liked Danny Pink the most in the finale, because he was really, you know, he did what had to be done, you know, with distinction. And, you know, it wasn't all just about him and Clara and dating, and you know,
yeah.
I mean, I totally get what you're saying about him not being interested in the doctor and not trusting the doctor. And in fact, very similar to somebody else, I can't remember who said it, but basically somebody said to the doctor that, you know, you basically have all these people who are willing to die for you, and you make it so easy for them to do that because they don't want to let you down.
Exactly.
Who said that? That was like, that was to the Matt Smith doctor.
Yeah. And there was a little bit of that too in the Tenet years too, where people would kind of say that sort of thing. Again, I think it's something that's been reiterated. And at some point, we've got to kind of like let that go for a while.
Yeah.
Because it's like, I get it. He's a dangerous man. He does things that, you know, and maybe you could bring it up like one episode, but do we really have to hammer this into the ground? Like, I got it, all right? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know, where it's sort of like almost like the Batman character where it's like, I'm the Dark Knight. I'm fighting a war against crime. I'm like, you tell me that every fucking episode. Enough already. You know what I mean? So, or every comic or whatever it is that they do with Batman. So, but
your folks are dead. Get over it.
Yeah, it's like, okay, you're a billionaire. Get some therapy and we'll move on. You know?
Hello.
So, I mean, in the end, what was the other thing that I was thinking of as far as like, oh, that speech at the end where she doesn't know that Danny is the Cyberman. And she's like, I know how to lie. She's like, the one man I will never lie to. The one man
I will stand.
And I was like, oh, God. Oh, God. It was like painful.
I was actually feeling quite badly for Mr. Pink at that
point. Yeah. And then when he kind of like.
That sucks.
He drops his head. Yeah. And he's just like.
Oh, my God, though. But when he dropped his head like that, I was like, you know, he almost, like, you could almost hear the sad trombone music going. It's like, I mean, the Brigadier did the same thing. Brigadier Cyberman.
Yeah.
The same
yeah.
thing. I'm like, come on.
Sad Cyberman.
Exactly.
Sad. Yeah. Well, their face expressions don't change.
It's
so you got to do something, right?
Right.
So, what did you think about the flying Cyberman?
I mean, if Daleks can climb stairs now, that's only a matter of time before Cyberman could fly.
They were badass, man. They were totally badass. Like when they took up in the air, it took off up in the air, and then when they were flying along the plane, like I was like, that is some Japanese robot craziness. I loved it. I thought that was great.
Remind me though, in the episode where they were fighting the Daleks, couldn't they fly there too?
I don't remember. I do not remember. What are you talking about? The Billy Piper, like when they were at war?
Yes.
I don't think they were flying.
The Daleks had the famous smack talk with the Cybermen, and
he
said, this is not war, this is pest control.
Yeah. No, I don't think they were flying. I think they had ships or something, but I don't think they were flying. I can't remember. But by the way, that is like one of my favorite like things, you know, and I'm not even like an old-time Doctor Who fan like you, but when that was that Dalek Cyberman war thing happened, I was losing my shit.
It was
like,
pretty
this
cool.
This is the greatest thing ever.
Right,
like,
it's true.
You know. So yeah, I don't remember them. But what did you think? Because I don't think I've ever asked you about this. When they did the first time the Daleks levitated in the Eccleston season, what did you think of that?
I thought that they did that in Remembrance of the Daleks in the seventh with the seventh Doctor. So I was like, of course they can levitate.
They?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I didn't know that. I didn't know that they had ever levitated before.
Yeah, they would actually. We saw that. We saw the first time the Doctor saw that happen. He was quite horrified. It's like, oh, shit. They're no longer, they're no longer needing wheelchair access. But now they're gonna come after me.
That's great. So, any final thoughts, like as far as this season goes, or any final thoughts as to the finale?
I was pleased overall. You know,
Santa Claus.
Yeah, that pissed me off.
What? Why?
Well, I mean, I'm not a big. So first of all, I'm not a Christian, so I'm not big into the Christmas episodes anyway.
Okay.
I always feel like really another Christmas episode. So the fact that actually Santa Claus himself dropped in, I'm like, come on. Come on.
Yeah. It's Nick Frost, though.
I don't know who that is, so.
Oh, you don't, what? Like Shaun of the Dead and Spaced and all that stuff? You've never seen that stuff?
No.
Oh, you got to rent Shaun of the Dead, Barry. You got to rent it. So good. He's such a good actor. He's a British actor and he does a lot of he's done a lot of those movies with God, I'm blanking out on them, but it's like he's a great actor and he's funny as hell. And I just can't, yeah, I can't wait to see that. So, yeah. So you're not down with Santa Claus?
You know, not so much. Sorry.
Yeah, no.
So what did you think about that?
Santa Claus? Well, he was in, hold on, Nick Frost, Shaun of the Dead, Hot Fuzz, The World's End, did a TV show called Spaced. He's great. He's fantastic. The Santa Claus thing, I was like, well, obviously, do you really think it's going to be like Saint Nick? I don't think it's going to be like something else, right? Unless they just totally are like, screw it. Like, and in which case I'm like, all right. Yeah, no. Oh, wait. Nick Frost. He does a lot of movies with Simon Pegg.
Simon Pegg was in Shaun of the Dead.
Yes, yes, yes. Well, that's how they both started. They started on this show called Spaced, and then they did Shaun of the Dead. Yeah, yeah. But anyway, enough about Nick Frost. Santa Claus on Doctor Who. Yeah, I think that...
I'm just hoping that he's like the Santa Claus from Futurama, where he's this murderous robot.
Or like Silent Night, Deadly Night or something
yeah,
like
exactly.
that. No, I'm agnostic. I don't know if there is. I don't know if there isn't. I'm not religious at all. You know, I was raised Catholic, but I don't care. Like Christmas to me is like between you and me, I don't want my daughter to hear it. I hate Christmas. Like I can't stand it. Like I can't. Like they've got Christmas decorations already, blah, blah. I love Halloween. I love that my daughter loves it. You know, I love that it makes her happy. I love that it makes my wife happy. I love all that stuff. But just the commercialism of it, it drives me nuts.
Sure.
That wasn't necessary to say on the podcast, but you know, whatever. So for me, it's like, whatever. I don't care. It's another fictional character. The Easter Bunny, Superman, anybody shows up. You know what I mean? It's like, okay, I'm cool with it. I think it's interesting that they've introduced it into the mythology of the show. And I'm kind of like, oh, this could be interesting. So I'm not against it, but you know.
And the fact is also what's very interesting to me is that he got into the TARDIS. He didn't, you know, the doctor didn't open the door. He just came in.
Exactly.
And nobody's supposed to be able to do that.
Well, do you think he's a Time Lord?
I don't. Well, that would also explain a lot.
Yeah, it definitely would. All right. So final thoughts. I interrupted you. Do some final thoughts and then we'll wrap it up because it's late where you are.
I thought that's okay. There's always time for Doctor Who. I thought the season was strong. I really enjoyed it. I thought that, you know, there were some lapses that I'm willing to forgive because I thought the two principals were so great. I thought Capaldi and Coleman were so great in what they were doing that I was willing to, you know, give a pass to the sometimes C+ writing. By and large, I thought the writing was like a good B+.
Yeah. Yeah. I have to say like, and I think you saw a conversation I was having with my friend, Daniela on Facebook where
who also like, if I recall is not a big Clara fan.
I know she's not a Clara fan. I don't care what she thinks. I love Clara. But where it was very much like I think she had kind of dropped the show, which I was like, wow, fair weather fan.
Jesus.
But the thing with me is that obviously when this season started, you know, I was moving into a new house, things were very busy, and Doctor Who has always, even with Matt Smith, was like very much like must watch television.
Sure.
And I do not know if it was because I was moving and just tired a lot and trying to keep up with, you know, the TV that I was watching and, you know, taking care of my kid. But I would definitely let episodes like hang on the DVR for a couple of days. And I never used to do that. So there's definitely a shift that's changed. Now, I love Capaldi. I love Clara. You know, but she's not coming back or she's leaving, which bums me out. But I'm very, very excited to see what Capaldi does because I feel like we've only really scratched the surface with him.
Sure.
Like I feel like we haven't really gotten to know him as well as, you know, we did in the beginning with Matt Smith, in the beginning with David Tennant, in the beginning with Christopher Eccleston. Like, I really feel like there's a mysterious nature to Capaldi and Capaldi's Doctor that they haven't even, like, really gone into you know, like his personality, you know, or the way he really sees the world, you know.
You know what, I would be very interested to see, you know, maybe they don't have a human as his next companion.
That would be great. Like just to, or just even to just a woman. Why not a guy or you know, whatever, you know, I would like to
see Rusty. Rusty the Dalek. Talk about an odd couple.
That's great. Somebody should make that a comic book. That would be awesome. Rusty the Dalek. That's great. All right. So this has been another episode of Part-Time Fanboy. I have been here with the Part-Time Fanboy, Doctor Who expert, Barry Negrin. My name is Christian Horn. Thank you for listening. And I think that you know, I'm still excited about Doctor Who.
You know,
I'm not giving up.
I'll be honest with you. You know, it was so hard for me to watch it when I was a kid, like on UHF channels, on a black and white TV in my parents' basement through like 50% snow, that I'm probably almost willing to watch any kind of crap they'll put up. I might complain about it later, but I will always watch it.
That's rough. Well, I think that Doctor Who has become up there with me like almost like Superman, where I read Superman comics for years and years and years and years and years and years, and I went through horrible story after horrible story after horrible story after horrible story because I loved the character. I loved what he stood for.
Right.
And I love Doctor Who. I have to say, like, this modern era has given me a lot to be happy about. So I think that you and I, well, we're definitely going to do the Christmas episode.
Sure.
But you and I have to get back to the Key to Time, my friend.
Name the time. I'm ready.
What's the next chapter?
Well,
again?
The next one is The Androids of Tara.
Sounds awesome.
It is awesome because you have Mary Tam playing multiple roles.
Ooh.
So you, and I know you like Mary Tam.
Our beloved Mary Tam.
Yeah, the Romana one. she will.
The only Romana for me.
She's all over this episode.
All right. We're going to do that. So, we're going to sign off. Part-Time Fanboy, Barry Negrin, Christian Horn. Thank you for listening. Bye.
Good night.
Part-Time Fanboy. Part-time. Part-time fanboy.com.